This is another great episode of Dear Analyst. And in this episode, I am very excited to have Sean Scott on the podcast. He is a managing principal consultant with Viscosity North America. And he also is an Oracle ace. And I'll have him explain a little bit more about what that means. Sean, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Al. I really appreciate it.
And you definitely have a very interesting background and a little bit outside of what I typically chat about with guests on the show. So I'll probably ask you a lot of questions because I'm just not as familiar with the type of projects and the type of work you work on. But I think it's important for you to talk about what you do because it impacts a lot of what folks like myself and other data analysts do day to day. So do you mind just quickly explaining a little bit about your background and what you currently do today?
Sure. Well, I've career-wise, I think I've more or less fallen backwards my whole career professionally. my first real job out of college, I was working customer service for a consumer electronics manufacturer. And after about a year of getting yelled out on the phone by folks whose TV had broken a week before the Super Bowl, I was pretty burned out, and a manager in one of the other departments saw that and offered me an opportunity as an inventory analyst, which meant I had to learn sort of a quasi-SQL reporting language, which led to me publishing an article in a technical journal. And that took me into a job working as a programmer analyst and eventually consulting in another consulting project where I was migrating code into an Oracle database. And so that got me some SQL and Oracle experience. And having that on my resume really opened up a lot of opportunities, which led to a job as an application programmer. My supervisor there, just as a really quick aside, suggested that I submit a talk to a user group event. And I think without her encouragement, I don't know if I would have ever realized how much I enjoy teaching and presenting. And that's been a big part of my career over the years. Probably the biggest forward stumble was becoming a DBA. And this is a story that my wife loves to tell. We were at a company holiday party and we're both sort of introverted. And so we're staying against the wall and not really mingling with people. And I was pointing people out that I worked with. And she asked, "Oh, who's that over there?" And I said, "Oh, that's our DBA." And so she asked what a DBA does. And I remember going on this long rant about how much being a database administrator sucked, how it's long hours and you're getting paged all the time. And I remember saying, "I will never, ever be a DBA." And less than a month later, our DBA quit. And my manager said, "We need you to do the DBA work until we hire someone." And after a year, they still hadn't hired anybody. And the company had been bought. I was burned out. They didn't give me a raise or anything. And I realized, well, you know what? DBAs make good money. And we had a new baby at the time. So I got a job as a database administrator and haven't looked back since. I'd say I've been really fortunate to spend time on a lot of interesting teams and interesting projects. I worked as a consultant, ran my own business for a number of years, and then took on a job with a really amazing infrastructure operations team at an e-commerce company. And mm-hmm. It's funny because I think that everything I learned there, everything I took away from that experience, it all started as, "Oh, well, you know, that's fine for your web servers, your application servers, but we don't do that with databases." And now those things are all the kind of the soapbox that I stand on, whether it's automation or version control, configuration management, Docker, Terraform, Ansible, observability, integration, and so forth. And I don't think that any of that would be part of my gospel if it weren't for that team that broke my "we've always done it this way" mentality. So now the job that I have right now is with, as you mentioned, Viscosity North America. I'm a managing principal consultant, and my company, we do database and application development. We're based out of Texas, and my job is kind of difficult to describe. The short version that I tell people is that I solve puzzles. The long version is I work on migrating and upgrading databases and figuring out ways to make them faster and more reliable. And I spend a lot of my time teaching others how to do the same. Automation is a big part of my job too. I build a lot of labs and a lot of repeatable lessons and experiences that people can go through so that they can see and practice those skills. Overall, though, I'd say that the background that I gained as an analyst and developer in my really early years is the key to any of the success that I've had over my career. I would say the technical skill is really important, but the best technical people I've worked with over the years, they all had great people skills, but they also had great business skills. And all the technical acumen in the world, I don't think will help you build a solution if you can't understand what someone's trying to accomplish or to see the problem from their perspective. It's sort of a UI UX argument. And that's especially true, I think, when it comes to things like innovation or even teaching and developing training.
Got it. Thank you so much for that background. I'm curious, from a data analysis perspective, what are some things data analysts and people who consume data, write SQL queries, what kind of misconceptions do they have about DBAs? And also, what can they do to better work with DBAs?
Well, we are a reserved bunch. We have to be. Okay. It's our responsibility to protect the data and the database, and we can be pretty touchy about it. And we're well known for it. My favorite DBA joke is, what does DBA stand for? Don't bother asking. and that's, it's a legitimate perception. And so from an analyst or developer standpoint, DBAs, we're perceived as kind of this barrier to any kind of progress, that we're often standing in the way. So appreciating that from the standpoint of being a developer is important. But I think that if you're savvy end user or business user or consumer of data and databases, you can probably understand that and maybe maneuver your database folks into a somewhat different perception of data and databases. And what I mean by that is, I think that a lot of DBAs fail to see a distinction between data and databases. We tend to blend them into a single entity. It's a database. It's the data and the database. But data is data, and databases are applications. And too often I'm speaking as a DBA here, we see it as that one thing. And consciously or unconsciously, we take this whole concept of data is special, and we apply that special tag, not just to the data, but to the database as well. We just lump it all together. We have that combination of the two, and we use that as an excuse to get away with things. And what I mean by that is, we don't always treat the databases as applications. So when we say data is valuable or data is special, it's a way of avoiding putting databases under configuration management or taking advantage of automation. There are plenty of shops that I work with out there where the database has this perception as a very fragile or brittle object that DBAs will say, no, we can't do this, we can't do that, because it might break the database. And my belief is, it shouldn't be that way. Done right, I should be able to just take swings with a baseball bat at my database all day long and not have to worry about it. And the way you get there is through good discipline, using the same protocols we use to harden the rest of the enterprise. So if a database is an application, the same procedures and the same techniques we use to manage the application stack and web servers and so on and so forth, if we apply that to the database, then we'll have that same sense of reliability and confidence in the database that we have elsewhere in the enterprise. So as developers, as analysts, I don't think that you can just go to your DBA and say, well, you know, you need to separate the software from the data. It's not quite that simple. But it's something that over time you can incrementally maybe encourage them toward, because that whole perceived fragility, that is a product of manual process, which is very common on the database side. We'll say things as DBAs, and I'm guilty of this, absolutely 100% guilty of this, of saying, well, you know, we have 50 web servers and, you know, all of this different infrastructure we run, but we only have one or two databases. So it doesn't make sense for us to build up this complex automation tier and to add all of this process and automation and whatnot just for those two databases. But if you don't know the deltas between your production and your non-prod systems, if you don't have those good processes, if you don't have that automation, if you don't have a culture of prove it, where you regularly drill on those capabilities and demonstrate that you're able to do things like restore your database, things like that, then you're going to be locked into that sense of having an environment that just isn't maybe stable or where it doesn't welcome changes and updates and things of that nature, upgrades, patching, that sort of thing.
Got it. Thanks for that. And again, this is getting more into territory that I'm more unfamiliar with, but I've spoken to a few data engineers in the past, and they've all talked about the rise of the quote unquote analytics engineer, someone who does data analysis, pulls data, does analysis, and presents those findings to the business. But they're also kind of in charge of doing some of the engineering work in terms of, you know, doing some version control or putting things into like a Docker image or something. And it sounds like you are kind of pushing people, DBAs, analysts, to think more about development and data together. I'm curious if you can speak a little bit more about that. I'm really kind of curious if analysts should be thinking about picking up more kind of developer skills over time, given where everything is moving towards.
Can you repeat that? You were breaking up just a little bit there.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I was wondering if what you think about analysts kind of picking up more developer skills over time, given that you're very into kind of pushing people applying more rigor to the way they handle data, the way they store it, the way they kind of recover it. We're just seeing a lot more around like engineering plus data analysis. So curious if you can speak more about that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's sort of the Renaissance mentality that goes with DevOps. Having worked on operations teams, I see a lot of change over the years where we've had niche specialists who only knew databases or only knew operating systems or storage or networking and didn't really reach outside or past the boundaries of their skill set. And that's become more, it's become more common for people to have a broader range of skills. And I think that's really important for several reasons. Of course, you know, the more programming languages or the more skills you know, the more tools you have in your toolbox, and the more capable you are of reaching in and picking out the right tool and knowing that it's the right tool. So if you can write Python and you can write Bash and all these different things, you're going to recognize situations where one language is better than another or one tool is better than another. But also that depth of skills is important for what you were mentioning when you have analysts or analytical engineers and development engineers who are working more broadly with data and databases and not just the result. So in the past, you might have had an analyst who was given a database and then worked within the confines of that database, but didn't necessarily have either the permission or the skill set to recreate that data on their own, to manage it on their own. And with DevOps, I think that we've seen a migration more toward this sense of creating infrastructure, and infrastructure here including data and databases, but creating that infrastructure more as building blocks. And so if you think of it as a Lego set, you can give a six-year-old a Lego set and they can build something remarkable. I remember my son growing up and we built Lego trains and all sorts of just amazing contraptions from his Lego bricks. If I were to say to him, okay, well, here's a mill and a lathe, go out and build all this on your own, of course he wouldn't be able to do that because he was six. And that's what we had in the past. By taking things and turning them into artifacts and assets that we can pull versioned copies of those into an environment, I think that we're enabling and empowering analysts and people that were previously traditionally not part of the infrastructure stack. Of course, the cloud has a good deal to do with this because, you know, we can go out and we can provision assets in the cloud a lot more easily than we used to when it required calling somebody up and saying, yeah, I need you to rack and cable a brand new server. So with the cloud and with that artifact-oriented approach to building things, there's a lot more potential for the non-traditional infrastructure people, analysts, developers, and so forth, to give themselves the opportunity to build those environments. And when you have more eyes and more capability in that arena, then I think that you get to a point where you're developing better ideas and better solutions because you're far less limited and you have a lot more eyes on the problem at hand. More eyes, more solutions, better solutions, hopefully better solutions.
I totally see that, where analysts can now kind of control how and when they, I suppose, structure and pull their data. And you also mentioned a phrase I really like to repeat, which is data as code and treating data as its own asset. Can you tell us more about what that means in the context of what you currently do? Because I've never actually heard that phrase before. I'm curious if you can explain that in a little more detail.
Yeah, absolutely. Docker is the thing that opened my eyes to data as code. Separating data from the database is something that Docker does very well, or at least makes more apparent to me. And so when you have database artifacts, you know, these are just the images. If you're familiar with Docker, we build images. And so if you have a database image, that's just an application. It's not necessarily a database. It's an application. It performs a service. So when you have that as an image, well, everything outside of that, what the database points at and what it uses, that's all data. And so we can take that data itself and we can turn that into an artifact also. One of two ways to do that. First, we just have that data set, all those files on disk are, you know, we can collectively see them as an object. And what I can store on disk, I can save in a repository, I can version it, I can use it and reuse it and distribute it to teams. So if I'm a developer and I need to restore my database to some sort of known point in time, I can just pull that from the repo or copy it from its source and point my database, my local development database, at that data. And I don't need a DBA to do that work for me, which from my perspective as a DBA is great because I don't want to be constantly spending my time refreshing developers' database environments or helping them run restores or anything like that. It's a skill that is completely detached from any specialized database skills. So that's the first way, treating it as an actual object. But the second way that we can do that is looking at data as code. And if you think about it, every data set has a known starting point. We begin from a brand new database. No matter how big or old your database is, it started out brand new. So everything that happens from that point onward is just a series of coded transactions, inserts, updates, deletes. So if we can replay that code against the known starting point, it's functionally identical to provisioning any other asset in the environment. And we end up with a result that is going to be reliably identical to that ending point or the result that we want. So what's important and what's really beneficial about that is that data goes stale and it's dirty, it gets messy. I'm sure we've all run into those situations working with data and databases. And so when you have dirty or stale or ugly data, that jeopardizes your testing, it jeopardizes your quality processes. Because if you can't rely on the data, if you're not 100% confident that the result that you run against that data is going to be on the same, or that's going to be the same today, tomorrow, next week, as it was last week, well, then you can't really validate and confidently say that changes to your application code or your analytic process, that they're good, that you can take those then to production. So being able to start over with those known quantities is really vital. And when that process is complex, when we have to bring in specialists like DBAs, it's going to add to the difficulty. It's going to add to the amount of resources that we need to accomplish that goal. And it will reduce the chances that you're going to get those data refreshes as often as you need or want. So when we automate and when we have those versionable artifacts, whether it's a data set, a known data set, gold data, or whether it's data as code, we're treating that much more like building blocks, and we don't need those niche skills. You know, we don't need somebody that knows how to run a lathe or to machine the database for us. We're just using the Lego blocks, and it's a lot easier to kick off those data refreshes. We'll get them on the schedule that we want them as analysts, as developers, as consumers. And so in the end, when we treat data as code and we recognize the difference between data and databases, we get those more repeatable tests and QA channels. The results that we get from those processes are going to be more reliable. And we worry less about modeling test scenarios around corner cases or accommodating the dirty data that we end up with. And the end result of all of this that the business side wants to hear is that it accelerates the development cycle and makes us more money.
Got it. And do you think there are specific type of industries or specific types of data where being able to replay the database or being able to have repeatable testing is more important than other industries or other data types?
I would say my inclination is to say no, because data is data, but I think that there are probably some industries where the pace of application development and innovation is higher, or the consequence of bad data or bad processes is greater. So the first thing that comes to mind for me is a commerce environment or e-commerce environment. If you have an online store and you're working in a very competitive space, it's important that you have a website, a customer-facing website that is going to be attractive to your end users, and that they're going to be comfortable using and confident using. So as you introduce features into a commerce environment or anything like that that has a high rate of innovation, then you need to be confident that your application releases, that your integration pipeline is clean, and that your code is good, and you're not going to end up with users who are experiencing suboptimal performance or that aren't getting the right things dropped into their cart. I know I recently booked a flight and my confirmation email had a not only my flight, but somebody else's flight. They were going to Hawaii. I really wish that I could have taken that flight because I booked a flight to Cleveland. So nothing against Cleveland by any means,
but a little
Hawaii
different.
Just yeah. seemed like a nicer place. Yeah, a nicer place in April, May. So, so you know, if you've got a process that's giving bad results like that, as a consumer, I'm thinking to myself, well, who got my flight information to Cleveland? But the other side of that coin is going to be environments where there is where you have critical processes. The first thing that comes to mind for me is healthcare. I do work with a lot of healthcare customers in my job, and there is a very high bar in the healthcare industry when you're working with military and similar environments. There's a really high bar for the quality of process. So being able to work with a gold standard data set and guarantee that your results are working before and after a change, I think is going to be much more critical in those types of environments than you might experience in some other industries where the pace is slower or where the consequence of bad data or a bad result would be more severe.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know we're getting close on time, and I wanted to quickly have you chat about a project which I thought was really interesting, which is you were able to take a database and manage it through Slack. I'm curious if you can tell us more about how this project came to be.
This was on that operations team that I was talking about. We were using a legacy application that was just really, really buggy. It was a big black box, so there was very little that we could do as users of the application. And one of the things that we ran into was, and this is speaking to that e-commerce environment where you have the end users that have expectations. So there was a problem in the promotion module. We would send out emails to customers and we would say, starting at 10 a.m. on Monday, log into the site and you'll get a 20% discount, or here's a coupon code for $10 off, something like that. And a lot of this is very time sensitive. Well, the application didn't handle that very well, and sometimes it would orphan data. And when that data got orphaned, well, we went through this process where the customer service team would contact the marketing team, and the marketing team would raise a ticket with the help desk, and the help desk would go to a developer, and the developer would verify the problem. The developer would contact the DBA. We would verify the problem, and then we would fix it, and then the whole result went back down the chain. And it took a few hours for that effort to proceed. But what we were doing as DBAs was just running a script, and it was something that was, we got to the point where it did all the validation. So we knew that we could run it. And if it was the problem that we thought it was that happened all the time, it just took care of it. If it wasn't, then it would just raise an alert for us. Well, it didn't make a whole lot of sense for us to go through that lengthy chain of one person to another. So what we did is we set up a channel for our marketing folks in Slack, and we created a user login on the database, and this is all very secured and everything. But ultimately, we just had a command that, you know, a slash command in Slack, if you're familiar with Slack. They could just do slash and, you know, fix promo, I think was the command that they ran. And then they'd give a promotion number, and it connected to the database, and it fixed the problem for them. And it came back and it said, hey, it's fixed. So no more tickets. And we didn't get bothered by that. But that led us as DBAs to say, well, you know, if we can do that, well, there's a lot of other stuff that happens in the database that we could do the same way. And if I'm out of the office, I'm at the grocery store or something like that, I get an alert. Well, I've got Slack on my phone, so I can just go into Slack and I can do my slash, you know, fix this problem command and hit enter. And then Slack on the back end calls a process on the database, which then goes out and fixes the problem for us. It's all automated and all very elegant and everything. We were a little bit cheap in the environment. I know that there are probably some database folks who are thinking, yeah, well, you know what? There are all kinds of tools out there that do the same thing, but we didn't have access to those tools because, as I said, we were a little cheap. But we had Slack, and we had free Slack. and we could do that all on the back end. And so it was a pretty neat use, I think, of Slack, maybe a little inventive and perhaps a little unusual, but it worked out really, really great. And I think that enabling and empowering our marketing folks to be able to do something like that had a larger or broader benefit, because it demonstrated to them, to end users, and there's a lot of end user ops kind of mentality in some organizations. So we were always seen, I think, as the IT guys, and they all work in the basement, and they're all nerdy and whatnot. When we said, hey, we're going to make something for you that's going to make your life easier, and it's going to make your life better, and it's going to make it so that you can do your jobs more easily, and it's customer oriented, that was the beginning of them, of end users looking at the technical folks a little bit differently, because they started to realize, you know what, they're not just no, we can't do that in the database. We're not just don't bother asking people. It was, you did something kind of cool for us. What else can you do? Can you do this? And it opened the door for them and created a much more robust back and forth, much better relationship between us and some of the business users. When we showed them, hey, you know what, we're behind you, and we want to do great things for you, and we want the business to succeed, and you know, we're as bothered by the getting tickets for this same old problem every couple of days as you are. So it was a neat project. I really enjoyed doing that, and it was fun.
That's a great story, and I think it ties together everything you said at the very beginning about how DBAs are resistance to change and are seen as people who like hinder things. But this example shows that your team really kind of wanted the whole business to succeed, and you helped the end users, in this case the marketing folks, with this problem. And you, like you said, improved the relationship and just kind of made DBAs and developers to seem less unapproachable, I think is a good word to say. Yeah. Well, Sean, thank you so much thanks so much for your time. And I wanted to see if there's anything else you wanted to bring up before we close out the episode.
I just go out and love your DBA and know that we have a tough job. I think everybody does, but we do try to balance the safety and security and reliability of the database against change. And we tend to be very protective about our babies. So be gentle with us, but I'd say also, you know, be demanding and in a nice way. and if that means, you know, just adding gentle prompts here and there about making data more accessible, about automating processes and doing things and framing it in the sense of mutual benefit. I think that's probably the real key. When you can say, I would like this thing, it's not just for me though, because it'll make your life better, because I will stop asking you to do this other thing twice a week or twice a month or whatever the case may be. So and just, you know, build good relationships and frame things in that collective positivity of what it does for individuals and for the enterprise as a whole, let's say.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you again, Sean, for being on the show, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.